are talking, you may not agree, so get your own podcast. Luke, Stan, Dan, and Michelle all love sitcoms. What about you? Do you love sitcoms? This is a podcast about sitcoms, another effing podcast about sitcoms.
Welcome to another effing poo-cast. About sitcoms. I am your host, Moo Like Kowski.
Cows are scary. Yeah.
I love that it's a poo cast. It could be either a podcast about Winnie the Pooh or.
Right. It's not a boo cast.
Nope.
It's a poo cast.
I meant to say poo.
Oh, it's just a podcast about poop.
And Luke Ward and Stan Bukowski.
It's like Charles Bukowski.
Yeah, yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah.
I'm in costume as Charles Bukowski.
Yeah. And Dan Mookinerny.
And we are here to talk about the Halloween episodes that we love. We did it last year. I had a blast. No one else did, but we're doing it again. So,
guess who runs the ship, folks? Who runs the ship? Yeah.
Boop, boop. That was me on the ship. And to get us started, Dan, we just need a suggestion of a story.
Nope.
Podcast.
Nope. Well, the first episode is the episode that Michelle picked, and it's an episode of Superstore called Halloween Theft. This was season 2, episode 6, written by Carrie Dornetto, directed by Alyssa Statman, and original air date was October 27th, 2016. After an apparent theft, Dinah launches a store-wide investigation,
Dina.
I'm going to be honest, it's the only episode of the show I've ever seen. So
it's a great show. You should watch.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it. But after an apparent theft, Dina launches a store-wide investigation, interrupting everyone's Halloween plans. Jonah and Shayna attempt to bond. Garrett tries to defend himself.
Cheyenne. Jonah
and Cheyenne attempt to bond. Garrett tries to defend himself in Dinah's theft probe while Amy wants to spend time with her kids.
It's not Amy, it's Amai.
Anyway, a bunch of Halloween stuff happens.
A bunch of Halloween,
Well, oh, guys, about it.
Dan, don't throw your headphones on the floor.
Oh, my God.
You'll wreck them.
To be fair, not a lot of Halloween stuff happens. They're just all costumes.
I disagree. See, that, I mean, we talked off mic about the Halloweeniness of these episodes, but I think that, like, you know, one of the things about Halloween is it brings out a side of you don't get to see, especially like in a workplace setting or even amongst friends. And so, I mean, this literally, the main plot point was that Dina, who is this literally buttoned up, assistant manager who has, you know, takes no guff from anybody, dresses up just because she grabs it for the first thing as the sexy cop. And they do it really smartly, where it's not like Lenny and Squiggy, where, I mean, her boobs are just, yeah, her boobs are out the whole episode. And they do it in such a way, like Garrett, one of the main characters, can't focus. And it's not in such a way where it's like, you know, he's just like, oh man, like, what am I trying to say? It's not like done in a Benny Hill sort of way. It's done in a, my brain and my groin are fighting.
This,
I don't
right.
know what to do with myself kind of thing, which is so great. And even like.
And by the way, it's boobs.
It's funny because he actually doesn't want to see it. Like, you know, he's not, and Benny Hill would be chasing her down the aisle. Yeah. But like, he's just like, I just wish. And the thing that's really funny about her is she's as buttoned up as always. She's just wearing a very sexual costume. So she doesn't become she doesn't unleash anything about her, which is an even funnier, like, you know, contradiction to watch.
Yeah.
But what's also funny about Dina, right, Dina?
Yeah.
Now I'm confused. Is that she is very oddly sexual, but it's not in a flagrant kind of way. It's just she's just like sex, and it's an interesting dichotomy for a woman, honestly.
It's a very powerful sexuality.
Yes.
That, you know, and then even like Amy and like all of them are just like, more in awe of her overall sexuality than her physical appearance, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But really, the whole thing is about her tits.
Yes.
Like, pretty much, pretty much. Like, I watched this, I think, yesterday, and I'm struggling. I know there was the subplot where they go to the other store, but yes. it's a pivot off of Dina's story because she's not going to let anybody go home.
So there was a theft. Thievery,
right.
Yes.
Of a bunch of vegetables that.
Well, I think importantly, the vegetables they were going to throw away because they looked weird.
Right.
Yeah.
They were going to throw it away anyway, so that was sort of insult to injury, where it was like, who cares if someone stole it?
Right.
But she's so by the book that they have to find out.
And she knows it's an employee theft. That's the reason she's holding all the employees hostage. She's
a real interesting story about my sister that you guys don't need right now, and we only have 15 mm-hmm. minutes, but she always, if there are things that are being thrown away, she gives them to people, and she could lose her job, but she knows families that really need it, so she always just has them come in when she's working, and she just gives them to her. My sister's kind of awesome.
That's nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Does she work at a grocery store?
She does.
She works at the bank. All the money that they're gonna, all the money that
they
gets
just
torn.
Throw money away.
That's amazing.
I mean, they do.
Yeah.
That should be destroyed. Yeah. That's not.
They're too big to fail. It doesn't matter.
I was gonna say, I love the moment where she's like, "All right, everybody freeze! No one's allowed to leave the store," and then no one's moving. She goes, I'm just talking to the employees.
Yeah.
You guys can leave the store. Yeah. That was a funny joke. I like that.
There's a lot of, Superstore, very underrated. I feel like I don't know if it's because it was really during the transition between broadcast and streaming and they didn't know how to market it.
Right.
I don't know if it was because I think it started when The Office was ending. I don't know. It had one of those things that people kept talking about how great it was, and it took me a while to find it.
Me
too. And I finally got it. I was like, wow, this is really good. This is a really funny show.
It was marketed on NBC. It should have been streaming. You're absolutely right. And it's more of a liberal show than most shows have ever been on NBC.
Yeah, they do. I don't want to get too much into the show itself. I want to focus on the episode, but they do get into some heavy, heavy subjects.
We 100% will be covering this because I love this show.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, that was what I'd heard about it. Well, I was going to say, that's what I had heard about it, I think the second season started right before the election. Actually, this is days before the election when this episode aired.
Oh, right.
Oh, wow.
In 2016. But, they were unafraid to talk about that because I think they're a big box store somewhere in the Midwest.
Yeah, it's Walmart. Honestly,
yeah.
That would come up. And then they did they kept going during the pandemic and everyone was wearing masks like you would have if you worked in a store like that. So that makes sense. And from marketing, just for me, first of all, I think the first six times I saw a commercial for this, I thought it was a store.
Right.
Until I finally noticed, I was like, why is Mark McKinney doing commercials for this weird Walmart store? I think the praise it got was that it was just a traditional sitcom, but was talking, was unafraid to talk about what was going on at the moment, which was, cool.
And legitimately funny, too,
Really funny.
Sometimes traditional. Sorry, go ahead.
No, Justin Spitzer is the one who created it, and he's from The Office.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And I think because it also seemed like it was one of those wacky Office wacky comedies in such a way that you're oh, boy. But it was, even in this episode, I can't think of any of the lines, but there's a lot of just one-off, especially in the deliveries where at the end where Garrett's just like, I'll just go with you to your stupid. So Jonah, the main character, is this liberal, very well-educated guy who likes to.
It's Luke.
It's me. Yeah. Likes the. Finer things in life. So he's like, oh, I'm gonna go see Nosferatu, anybody want to go? And they're like, ugh, that sounds awful. But Garrett, to get away from thinking about Dina, is like, sure, I'll do whatever you want. He's like, oh, it's a silent German expressionist. He's like, this keeps getting worse. Fine. And it's just great. There's just a lot of great delivery. And the only thing that this episode was missing was Cheyenne's husband.
I love him so much.
I think his name is Brad.
Yeah.
Yeah? He does this thing.
I don't think it's Brad. That doesn't sound. It doesn't matter.
No. Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. But he does this thing where he's just like, yo, what's up? I just love that. I do that around the house all the time.
I don't know why he doesn't appear more regularly on the show, because every time he's on, I'm just like staring at him on screen. He's great.
He was, if you guys are New Girl fans, anyone? He was the one in the virginity losing, they all tell their virginity losing stories, and she being Jess from New Girl, who... You know who she is. Anyway, she went to prom with him, and they formed a society of mutual, like, it was basically like this really ridiculous, I won't touch your boobs until you give me your permission. So they go to prom, and they're in a hotel room, and he's like, may I please take off your dress? And she's like, I grant you permission. And he is also hilarious in that episode. So.
I'm starting to think I know why this episode was picked. That was a very easy pivot to New Girl.
Well, wait till I get to Cheers and pivot. That's going to be the one. gave something away. Yeah. But I want to also say about Amy and Halloween, her daughter grows up and doesn't want to go to Halloween with her, which is such a rite of passage for children, as well as devastating for adults. Like our 12-year-old... has nothing. He last year, I didn't see him. Like it's just like they're gone. They just go.
Well, that's a great moment because they can't leave the store until the investigation's done. So she wants to go to trick or treat with her daughter, and it's this whole thing where she's like doing all this stuff. She can get out and go trick or treating, and then right at the end, her daughter calls and says, "I'm going to my friend's house. I'll see you later." And she's like, "Oh, okay, great." Yeah, and then, so of course, is like devastated that like this whole day has been leading up to this. And then she's like, "I know kids have to grow up, but I thought I'd get another year at least."
Yeah,
and it's really hard.
Yeah, that was a really nice human moment.
Yeah, followed immediately by
Cheyenne.
Amy talking to Jonah. Yeah. No, Amy's talking to Jonah after Jonah learns that everybody thinks that Jonah has a crush on Amy, and this guy in a turtle suit, I believe.
I think it was just dressed as a pumpkin.
Oh, pumpkin. Yeah. That's right. That was a pumpkin.
Yeah, yeah.
Does the finger in the hole hand gesture. And I want to point out the whole hand is moving, not the finger hand. As if the man is just standing there and the woman is doing all the work. So let's just.
Sounds about right.
That rang true.
Also, a really wonderful little is it an Easter egg? If it's like a no, it's foreshadowing. Yeah. With the so later in the series, there is a murderous employee from Superstore. Is that correct? Cloud Nine is the name of the store.
Oh yeah, the Cloud Nine
in the last episode, I think you learn that it was indeed an employee.
So there's this. Dan, you'll find out because I'm going to make you watch the show. There's a serial killer, which you don't see any murder, don't worry, who has been killing people. Obviously, that's what serial killers do. And you see in this episode, in the costumes, a cloud, a person dressed as a cloud with his mouth and part of his costume red.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yep. Which is just a nice little, like they thought about that from the beginning.
I thought you were going to say, and this is so sick of, I'm apologizing in advance, you said foreshadowing, when the little old woman was talking to death, and she really died.
Yeah. Like,
she really dies.
The actress actually dies.
And then they use her, Dan, and everybody else, if you haven't seen, they use her as a polygram. That's not a word.
Nope.
Hologram.
Hologram. Yeah.
Polygram I believe.
Yeah. Polygraph.
Well, that was one thing that this show, having not seen it, I had to very quickly be like, what's going on? Oh, okay. Because there's like little blackout gags.
Yes. They do a lot of those. They do a lot of them.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with anything. And that was a good, like, I mean, I'm sad that she died, but she's also clearly very, very old. Yeah.
Very old.
And there's like this old woman is stocking the shelves, and like someone dressed as death walks by, and she walks and starts following him as though like, I guess this is it.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Well, the first time is that she's actually touching him to die. Like, she's like grabbing onto him, like, fucking kill me.
Yeah.
Oh, look at so where gross. I work. It's so great.
There's a lot of great blackout gags on this series. Like, so good. And they also do this amazing thing when they have the blackout gags, and I don't think they did it this time around, is they take pop songs, like popular current songs and do the Muzak versions of them while they do these blackout gags.
Yeah. For anybody wondering what a blackout gag is, it's essentially like a 10 to 15 second joke that almost exists outside of the rest of the show. It's just one funny joke.
Usually they're customers doing something
weird
that they shouldn't be doing that you know probably
eating meat
happened.
Out of like the package or
or using the like a fake toilet
Oh God, what's his name? Was using the toothbrushes, like kept trying all the toothbrushes. We know him.
Matt Oberg?
Matt Oberg was like featured as just that guy.
Yeah, he appears on the show a good couple times.
Good, not the bad kind, the good kind.
Well,
good.
And having been part of that process, it's just, you know, there was a day they're like, all right, we're going to write 300 of these.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everyone sit down, like, let's get the whiteboard out. Yep. And they just thought anything they could think of.
Yeah.
They wrote down, but yeah, that's so funny because then when that guy in the cloud costume walked by covered in blood, I was like, I don't get it. What was that?
I actually
was like, was that like a menstruation joke that I wasn't getting? But
I'm not 100% convinced that's foreshadowing to the thing you talk about.
No,
I think it's a weird thing that we saw.
Nope.
No, because I'm with Mo on this one because I recall. Throughout the series, they keep finding body parts in the store,
like a foot,
and then it turns out a former Cloud Nine mascot is a serial killer.
Mascot, thank you.
So it might be that guy literally walking around. Yep.
Yes.
Well, then also we're running out of time, by the way. But also that other guy, one of the other subplots, is the guy has a date and he's trying to get out for.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is related, but the guy's there saying like, "Oh, in the other store, someone got stabbed in the head, and that's why I'm here."
Yeah.
I didn't know. I don't know who that guy is, so I didn't know how significant
that was. He's the regional
manager.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he's dating
Mateo,
but he's not allowed. Like,
we should have had Dan read the name off the sheet.
Yeah. Oh, he's reading
Matthew.
Yeah.
And they're they're gay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But that's not the part where they can't be together. It's more that he's the regional manager and he's an employee. So
it's the work structure.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mo's just like, oh, gay. I guess that's okay.
Wait, is it 1956? Oh, it's not. Oh, okay. All right. Then I guess they could be together.
Yeah.
All right. Any other last thoughts on this before we move on?
I just forgot how much I love the show. So
yeah, it's a great show.
I cannot wait to cover Superstore.
Yeah, well, it's all over, right. So it fits the box of being a completed show. I just, I feel this way for all of them. I just love Halloween. Like, just the fact that they're in costumes walking around just is, like, it gives the show like a 20% bump of enjoyability for me.
I actually don't like Halloween.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't care about Halloween. I wish I did.
It cares
I do
about
enjoy
you.
What?
It cares about you.
I disagree. I do enjoy like how excited my daughter gets and we go trick or treating and all that good stuff. That part I like. But before that, I would always be like, I don't care. And we'll talk more about that during my pick because it applies very much to that. But let's segue to the next show.
Yay!
Well, I was going to say, it was one nice thing. I think a reason why Halloween episodes are so popular is that it is funny that there. I would always think, like, on Halloween, like, going to work in New York City, it was just so funny. There was one day where everyone was dressed insane.
Yeah.
And no one blinked an eye because you were like, all right, it's Halloween.
Try getting on the PATH train with, like, a crowded thing of everybody in costume. It's so weird.
It's just
the opening thing for Superstore where she's like, all right, I'm gonna put on a different costume, and then like and they're all like staring at her, but you don't see what she looks like, and then it cuts back to her and she's dressed in this insane like stripper costume, and she's like, all right, let's get to work, you know, and it's like, this is the one day of the year where you can't say anything,
right?
Like
yeah.
you just have to accept that this is happening. But okay, so that leads us into our next episode, which is episode Cheers. Yes,
sorry, I should have said this. Mark McKinney trying to sit down in a hot dog costume.
Oh my gosh,
we didn't even talk about that.
The slow burn of that was so great.
I guess, is he like kind of dumb?
Yes.
He's overly optimistic and sure.
Okay. Well, just him telling everyone, I'm a hot dog, even though he's clearly in a hot dog costume, was a good run again.
Oh, God, he's so great.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. So our next episode is Cheers, the episode Fairy Tales Can Come True, season 3, episode 4, written by Sam Simon, directed by James Burrows. So Murderers Row here. Original air date, October 25th, 1984. Cliff meets the woman of his dreams at the bar on Halloween night, but is afraid of meeting her while he's not in costume. And Sam and Diane have their first non-romantic outing together after the breakup. Thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
This was so good. And yeah. I forgot there was so much... The jokes were so much better than I remember. Because again, I'm... Not again, but, you know, I kind of grew up in the second generation of Cheers, the cheesier Cheers. And these were so...
Tight.
Oh, so, yeah, but these were, like, so much better. I mean, like, there's that joke right at the beginning where Frasier is reciting the Raven. And at the end, Coach goes, wow, you really know how to tell a story. And he's like, no, that's Poe. He's like... No, don't sell yourself so short.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's a great episode. I was familiar with this one. I had watched it not too long ago, but watched it again and thought I might be a little bored because I knew exactly where it was going. Nope.
Nope.
It's every bit as good.
And I think it really goes into that Halloween thing where you could be someone else and you can hide.
That's what I think is the best part of this is he does become somebody else in a costume, as did she. Like their courage. their courage essentially like I want to say explodes, but that's the wrong word. They're a lot more courageous because they don't have any stakes in the game because they're a pretend thing right now.
But then
the next day is November 1st and you have to go back to being who you are. Also
it's All Saints Day.
Sam,
right, and
Joan's
sorry.
Birthday. Happy birthday, Joan.
Happy birthday, Joan. Just for the audience, so I think we said this, but Cliff meets a woman. They both have masks on, and they don't say their names. He's Ponce de Leon, which is hilarious.
Constant Leon.
So she calls him Ponce. She's Tinkerbell, so you can call him Tinkerbell. So the fact that the next day they have to take their masks off and say their real names is what freaks them out.
And they set up the episode. They do joke about Cliff not dating, but they really lay into him prior to him meeting the date.
So
that
mean.
One guy, that I thought that goes too... Like, the one guy... And also, I was wondering, why was that just one regular not in a costume, but everybody else was? Like, the one who was the meanest
to Cliff...
Well,
Norm wasn't either.
No, Norm had a Nixon mask on the counter, so
it
was
there.
Oh, I
saw that. You're right.
Although he didn't wear it. But I thought, well, maybe it's because he's such a jerk, they didn't want to, like, make him look less mean by putting him in a costume. I just thought it was a weird choice for, like... Because that guy talks a lot in the first couple of seasons, the one who really gets on his case.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to a bar in Boston, especially a CD bar, but they're... That's the thing about Cheer, again, the second generation of Cheers is like everybody's so nice and sweet and maybe they have a couple of jabs here and there, but like that guy felt like I've seen that guy at a bar in Boston. Like that that I think was when Cheers was trying to play it a little bit more real. And so that guy
gritty
he would not have put on a costume is what you're saying.
He would not have put a costume. He would have been
that big of a dick.
He would have been a dick.
And well, I was going to say the most unrealistic part is they briefly discuss the possibility that Cliff is gay, and the fact that nobody drops the F bomb or is horrified or anything.
Yep.
They just sort of discuss it like it's a possibility.
And that joke with that, Coach. Oh my
God. So good. So good.
Well, and that's not, you know, I mean, it's great writing, don't get me wrong, but like just the acting in that is so funny.
Yeah.
It's just like, so the joke is he's like, you know, there was this guy on the Red Sox, and he, you know, he liked this, and he dressed nice, and he had a friend who was a florist, and he goes, that he lived with. He goes, oh, that guy wasn't gay, and then Sam's like, he was gay. And he's like, why? Oh, okay.
All right, well,
then you see him. And then he goes, whoa, do you and Cliffy wants to meet him? And it's like,
that's the one. Yay.
That's,
I love the show so much.
Coach did all of the heavy lifting in that joke, but Sam's very subtle. No, he was gay, Coach. Like, was actually my favorite part. Like, it was so underplayed, but, like, he was, like, clearly, like, hey, Coach, come on. Like, you know, it was great.
Actually,
Sam looked like Woody, by the way, to me, so much from the Pixar movies. Like, he's dressed as a cowboy, but very much looked like Woody to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just want to shout out to Sam, period, in this whole, because he's listening, this whole episode, because his kindness to Cliff just Yeah. It made my heart so warm.
The whole thing was done really well, where it wasn't overly sentimental to Cliff, like to the point where they were hurting him, but at the same time, it definitely was a warm the cockles of your heart kind of thing, which was great. It's like there's a moment where Norm kind of helps him psychs him up.
Right.
And he does it in such a way which is nice. Like, you're a great guy. He's like, no, I'm not. He's like, you know what? Then fine. I'm not going to talk to you until you realize how great of a guy you are.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's really, it was a lot more subtle. The whole episode was more subtle than I remember Cheers being.
Yeah, Cheers goes very broad when Rebecca comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. It was the first four seasons. Hello.
Yep. Yep.
You know what I say. Yep. But I think we've already discussed this, but I do believe that the last four or five were pretty great too. Like, it wasn't to the point where I'm like, this is the worst show ever. You know how I feel.
No.
That's called Better Off Ted, if you want to remember that.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
I'm back. But Cheers, I just did a show plugging our podcast, you guys. So I'm sure we're going to just pick up the listeners.
Nice.
Called Modern Domestic Moms. My friend Stephanie asked me to be on. She's lovely. And she asked me to do my top five sitcoms of all time that I love so much. And Cheers was 100% on there. So
it's a great don't get me wrong. It's a great show. It is. We've talked about this before. Tonally, it's two different shows split up. With the same characters. So
It is, but it isn't.
Two tiny things that I want to point out from this particular episode. So when Cliff is a mailman, his pants are a little too short and he always wears white socks. I love that in his suit, which he can clearly buy the pants on his own, the pants are a little too short and he wears white socks. Yep. So great. The other thing that Michelle and I talked about, which is who cares, but here we go. They get back from the concert before 8 p.m.
Oh, right.
They go to an orchestral concert, and it's over by 8 with fireworks. We're like, that's a little... Because remember, Cliff's supposed to meet her at 8 p.m., so we know it's not yet 8 p.m.
Yeah. We do know that it is November 1st. Also, happy birthday to Jenny McCarthy. And isn't that funny that I have two friends at the same birthday? Anyway, so it will be dark. So we can give them that, but it's not going to be dark at... it could be dark at 7.
Well, it just to me, an orchestra event, it feels like it's a nighttime event. Like, you go, that's your night. Right, you're not done, and then you can go to dinner after.
I am the one who pointed it out because I was upset by it, but then I paid it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I said to Michelle, all he had to do was meet her at 10 p.m. instead of 8 p.m., and there you solved it. But
that's a common sitcom or even TV trope where it's like everyone can get around Boston in 15 minutes. Like, where were they coming from?
Well,
like,
you're certainly not in a car if you're doing that. You're walking.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, that's good. I forget.
It doesn't matter then, anyway.
Yeah, this episode's garbage.
Dan, this was worse episode ever.
I'm starting to think this episode didn't happen.
It's just.
But yeah, and then it ends obviously nicely where
so nicely.
The woman doesn't show up, but then in the end she does because she was too nervous to come. But this show is, I think, realistically cynical, especially in these early goings, and I love that it ends nicely. I mean, it's not it's not perfect, like obviously, and we never see that woman again, but at least it worked out for this. Yeah. This
although
one night, so.
That, so I looked her up because I was like, oh,
thank
I wonder
you.
If this woman did anything. She played the voice of Vera. Going forward on this show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, you're right. You know what? I did see that. And she's why can't I think of Norm's real name?
George Wendt?
She's George Wendt's wife in real life.
Oh, what? That
makes sense.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's
she was on the George Wendt show and she was on Frasier.
Oh, if I can go on a teeny tiny tangent, while we were researching the episodes, I watched the MASH episode for Halloween to see if I wanted to make that my favorite. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, I didn't pick it. There's a scene in it where George Wendt plays a Marine who gets a pool ball stuck in his mouth. And that scene goes...
His mouth.
His mouth.
I'm glad he didn't get stuck anywhere else. Yes.
Oh, but the whole joke of that scene is that Winchester knows that he's a dumb Marine who did it. So, he pretends he doesn't understand. Because obviously you can't talk if a pool ball is in your mouth. It's got to be a full minute and a half of George Wendt, tap dancing. It's so painfully long.
It's so painfully
sadly
long.
Not funny at all. And I was like, well, season 11. Anyway, yeah, that was when I decided it's not making the cut.
Yeah.
It was really long.
Actually, did we even watch the end? I didn't.
No, we didn't finish it. We turned it off after that scene.
It was just like, ugh.
Yeah, sucked.
It was give me the hook, is what I'm saying.
I mashed at the remote to put something else on.
Okay. So anything else with this Cheers episode? Or I mean, we're not running out of time, but I loved it.
No, I mean, the only thing that was weird to me, and I think you have to see the Sam and Diane thing in content. Like, I felt like I was looking at one piece of their relationship. Like, yeah. Like I feel like there was a bigger story. Mm-hmm. That felt like a chapter of a Sam and Diane book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I having not read the whole story, it felt like this is kind of a nothing thing, but.
They had
already dated and broken up. It was like they have
no. I know that. I know that. I guess what I'm saying is like, as an arc, it didn't do anything for me.
Right.
Like it just was just kind of a blip on the radar. And so,
but last joke with Sam being, she's like, "Hey, this is the first time that we didn't end up sleeping together after going out," or something to that effect. And I'm sure I'm. Yeah. Misquoting, and he's like, "It's not over yet," and she runs up the stairs. That was fun.
Yeah, it's true. I loved the joke. Well, what would you call a date where you there's no chance of having any sort of sex, and he just goes, "A first."
so good.
All right. Well, we can leave it there. Move on to the next episode, which was Happy Endings, an episode called Spooky Endings, season 2, episode 5, written by Daniel Libman and Matthew Libman, I guess they're brothers.
Yep.
Directed by Fred Savage.
Yep.
Original air date October 26, 2011. Jane and Brad spend a scary Halloween house sitting for friends in the suburbs while the rest of the gang heads to a warehouse party where their respective costumes don't quite have the effect they anticipated.
There's a
thoughts.
Okay, there's a couple things. Number one, I love this. It was so much fun to watch. I loved the joke, and it's very topical now because one of the main characters comes dressed as Austin Powers, and they're like, "Oh, that's great! Can't wait to see you as Borat in 9 years," which I thought was like, "Hey, that's us, my wife,
my wife."
It's still cool. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I want to now. I tried the first episode of Happy Endings, and I was just like, "Eh." I now really want to. I'm gonna watch this all the way through. It's so that episode was so funny and great that I'm like, I'm in.
So I'm the one who picked this one. And
good job, Stanley.
It's the only episode I've ever seen of the show. So
oh, really?
It is.
Oh, it's such a good show.
That's good. Yeah.
Well,
it's a good show.
You know what I couldn't help think? First of all, I did really like the show. I thought it was clever, and I thought it was funny, and I thought the dynamics were great. But it reminds me of, like, and here I go, Michelle. It reminds me of, like, the beta version of New Girl. I feel like New Girl does it all 10% better.
Yeah.
But that this alone, had New Girl never come around, it doesn't matter. It's perfectly fine on its own.
A couple things that are New Girl related.
Yep.
You're welcome. Number one, it did come before it, and the Damon Wayans Jr. Is he a junior?
He is a junior.
Yep. He is.
Character was on New Girl, and this got, they didn't think it, Happy Endings. Have we already discussed this? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I think we might.
I think so. Yeah,
yeah, like we did. So, versus, yeah, yeah, so Coach is on, this had to go to this, back to this show because nobody thought it would last. So I think that's interesting. Also, Dr. Sam is on it. Oh gosh, I love that, the gay guy.
It was,
that I don't know.
It was
know,
so great.
Baseball.
So like, So for the audience,
Thank you.
Character whose name I can't remember her, the actress's
Nancy.
Name.
Nancy.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. Yep.
Janice.
But
you talk about the blonde woman from 24?
Yes.
Marilyn Monroe blonde woman?
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe.
And she was also like the
Alex. Her name is Alex.
Right.
Alex. That's right.
Alex.
That's right. Because she has a voice. Yeah. Right. That's right. Okay.
But
sorry.
She's traditionally been, she was the girl next door in the movie, The Girl Next Door. Mm-hmm. Like she, what's great about this show is she's really funny. And it really is the first time you see her funny chops because she's, has been kind of a sexy.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. And so in this, she's Marilyn Monroe, but she's a cult. So she's talking like this the whole time. And so the doctor, the guy who plays, you know, Dr. Sam is in this and thinks that she's a man. And so they do this thing where, you know, it's a bunch of misunderstandings in such a great way, too. You're like, oh, when someone was tucking me in tonight, I thought, didn't think I was going to come out, but I finally did.
It's like, you just came out
there. Yeah. And, and it's such cheesy jokes. But then it builds up to this thing where she says to this, it's her ex-boyfriend, you know, who's like, oh, he thinks you're a man. She's like, no, he doesn't. And he says something like, I can't wait to take you home later. She's like, see your penis.
Right. Nobody would ever say that.
But it was just great.
Yeah, Dr. Sam.
And I love it because they talk about how seemingly unimportantly at first, they talk about how there's going to be a drag queen contest at the party.
Right.
So that's the setup. And then she has the cold. So she has like a raspy voice. Her name is Alex. And yeah, I just love how each thing got set up. And then when the payoff, when you figure out that he thinks that she is the drag queen, not an actual woman. And I was just like, oh, like, I just love that sitcom thing of like, and here's the trick. And I was like, oh, great. Oh, they did it. I love it.
And they did it so like, these are great boobs. I can't wait to just touch them.
Yeah.
You guys see them?
Yeah. He was like, you did a really good job on those. She was like, oh, thank you.
When did you get them? Oh, eighth grade.
Eighth grade. That's right. It was good.
And very Halloween-y. Let's go to the suburbs.
This is very, very. Oh, okay. You want to? Okay. The suburbs was probably my favorite story of the three.
100%.
I loved it. I actually wish they had spent a little more time there. Like when, so, because I don't know the characters that well, it's Damon Wayans Jr. and his significant other. And she drags him out to the suburbs because they're deciding if they want to, like, they're almost like forecasting what it will be like to live there and have their own kids. And he doesn't care about it at all. He just wants to, like, have a fun Halloween night. But basically, the Halloween candy gets stolen very early on, and, like, they wind up being threatened, sort of, by the bigger kids in town. And one of the joke where they keep throwing rocks, like, or through the window messages, and the message keeps saying over, like, flip it over.
Yes,
and then, one where they say over and she flips it and then it says this isn't over is so
and she
good.
Flips it again.
Yeah.
That's great. I just want to say I just the bit because the candy's stolen and then the kid's like, your candy's gone, and they're like, oh yeah, and he's like, you should get more.
Yeah.
The big kids are coming.
Right.
That was such a great.
Their front door gets stolen, which is just such a weird choice, but it was really funny. Well,
and I don't know if you noticed, but when the candy is gone, the kids get taller and taller and taller.
Yes.
As they come on until the big kids get there, which is so great.
And that's actually very Halloween-y to me. Like, older kids come out. It is a hierarchy of who's coming out at what time. Yeah. I remember that very well. Like, when it was dark, oddly, after MASH at 9:30, it was only high school kids. Like, now, we actually, in our development, sometimes have, like, little kids coming around at 9:30. But back then, it was very different.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I thought it was great. And then him trying to get the door back and then him taking the wrong door and just leaving it.
Right.
It was great.
The whole joke of why that kid was carrying a door because
he's like, my friends aren't going to be the Doors, the band. He goes, like, who are you? He goes, Ray Manzarek. That's a fake name.
And, I'm glad they acknowledged how heavy Doors are. And because he takes the door from the kid and he's like, wow. And the kid's like, right?
This, by the way, we talked about this, I think, last time, but they do this so well. I mean, this is a show that squeezes 12 pounds of jokes in a 10-pound bag.
Yeah.
So many things in there where, like, he's like, oh, this bring, like, I want to go to the hot tub. And they're like, well, we have to give out candy. Well, let's just bring those kids back to the hot tub. Like, I just heard that out loud. That's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot of the New Girl vibe to me. I feel like New Girl also does a lot of that, like, joke upon joke upon joke.
Listen, I'll say it. Happy Endings walked so that New Girl could run.
Yeah,
you know
that's a good point. Yeah, yeah. And then the third story is also really funny. It's Casey Wilson and Adam Paley go, which is a great Halloween trope, a couple's costume. They're not a couple, but they are completely reliant on each other because they are literally bound together in the costume.
It's such a smart joke.
The story is basically they each meet a love interest and then they have to share their time back and forth with who gets to do who. Not who gets to do who, but who gets to spend time with who.
Well, and who gets to do who? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess it could go to that.
Well, and there's also a great bit, just to interrupt you, yeah. Stan, there's a great bit in the beginning when they meet Lincoln. And he's
Matt,
like,
is that Matt?
Like,
that's
yeah,
it.
That's UCB. Matt Besser. Yeah.
It is Matt Besser.
It is Matt Besser, yeah. But he's like, so this is another guy at the party, and he's like, hey. And they're like, hey, like both of them. And then they're like, I can't wait to see, I'll see you inside. And they're like, I'll see you inside. And then at one point, Amabella goes, wait, just to be clear, which one of us are you flirting with? And he goes, I'm flirting with her. He goes, okay, fair enough. Like, because they're both responding until they figure out who.
Yeah, and I think he says, I'm exclusively flirting with her.
Right.
this one drains its like every drop of the physical humor, like when they're dancing and Adam Paley is smashed between the two of them because he's a baby on her chest. She's like carrying a baby Bjorn, and that's Adam Paley.
So good.
Also, the guy who plays Adam Paley's love interest eating all the turkey and stuff, I can't think of his name, but he was on Workaholics. He's really, really funny. I don't know if you guys know him.
I thought that was Seth Meyers' brother.
I'm not sure.
I didn't look it up. I meant to
Mike Myers?
Yep.
Happy Halloween, everybody!
And that's our show. Nope, sorry. It's...
But anyway, it looks to me also like a star-studded. My guess is that every episode probably had five fun guest stars on it.
It's a show. I mean, this definitely UCB. Jackie Clark, who was a UCB person, who
wrote
for this show and for a Superstar Store, funnily enough. But there's a ton of UCB people who pop up on this show, and it is just crammed with jokes faster and faster and faster, and it's so great. I mean, it's just a lot of fun.
Oh, one other tiny shout out. They did a great job of making the Marilyn Monroe character look sick in the opening. Remember when she pops her head up from the couch? I'm like, that's what a sick person looks like.
You know, not to bring back Better Off Ted again, but...
Oh, boy.
How dare you?
Well, it is a scary episode.
Well, here's what... you know what Better Off Ted failed to do, which this show does really well, is
be well good.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, but use the, not only do they have funny jokes, but like visual jokes too, and things and timing with the camera and like using the medium, you know, where they're all doing this thing and then they're like, oh, I wonder what Alex is gonna do. Hi, how are you doing? You know, and then you cut to her and like, oh right, she's disgusting and she's sick, and then, you know, you look like Brett Butler, like Grace Under Fire. Yeah, you know, it's so good.
I mean, that was such a great, like, realistic moment where she's like, you sound like Brett Butler, and he goes, who's Brett Butler? Grace Under Fire. Oh right. Yeah. Like, it's just just such a quick cutaway thing. It was funny.
Also, I love Brett Butler. Can we just talk about her?
She's great.
Yeah,
we could do that. We could do Grace Under Fire. Great show. Anyway. How dare you?
I've not seen it in a long time.
Yeah.
How about that guy's name is Will Greenberg?
Oh, the guy I was saying about the turkey eating guy? Oh.
Yes. He's not Seth Meyers' brother. But he was.
Couldn't we have left him as Mike Myers?
Yeah, he was on Workaholics. He plays an incredible douchebag, and he's really, really good at it.
He was just really funny and bizarre. Like, his timing was really wonderful.
You should watch the Workaholic episode, because that's what they really, really zero in on. It's so good.
So good.
And I love his costume with ZZ Top Gun.
Yeah, that was
great. Oh my gosh.
I didn't understand the Barbara Walters exploding joke, but...
I didn't get it either. I know what you're talking about. I think we're probably 20 years too old, 30 years too old. Barbara Walters, I guess, is also
no.
She's way older than us.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
I think that.
All right. Moving on.
That was great.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
I was trying to Google Barbara Walters exploding. I didn't get it. So it's fine. See if that brought up anything.
And now
your search history is.
I was gonna say I'm now on a very weird watch list. So the last episode is not a sitcom, but we did discuss that we would loosen the rules a little bit for this one, and it is it's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, which was written by Charles Schultz,
directed
by
that.
Bill Melendez. Well, I think it's literally just the comic strips like put together.
Is it? Is that what? It flows like comic strips, like just. Yes. Kind
oh,
of
you think it was all produced stories that they just sort of stitched up?
So I think they literally, because there was a run of comics about the Great Pumpkin that I think they literally just took all those and strung them together to make a show.
That makes sense.
But they were originally, I'm sure they added to a little surgery.
Yeah.
But, But officially, it says on IMDb, it says written by Charles M. Schulz, directed by Bill Melendez, and the original air date was October 27th, 1966. And the Peanuts gang celebrates Halloween with Linus hoping that finally he will be visited by the Great Pumpkin while Charlie Brown is invited to a Halloween party.
For the first time.
So
I just want to say, just as a setup, no, the only thing I was to say as a setup is all three of these, the Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Halloween Peanuts specials, I've had this love before that it is fascinating to me that these have endured for so long because they are so weird and they're all weird in their own
way. This is the first time. So I picked the show. I watched it actually with my daughter. She laughed out loud at a few things, which is great. Cause getting her to watch the same things that I want to watch is really hard.
Yes.
But watching it as both a parent and as someone who, and as an adult who was aware that Charles Schulz suffered from depression, this was just like such a cry for help that no one picked up on. I mean, like, number one, I know it's part of the thing, but where are the parents? Like, the whole time I was like, these poor children are being the adults in their own lives. And that made me sad. Mm. Like, the fact that Lucy has to wake up at 4 a.m. to go get Linus from the pumpkin patch. And there's not an adult in sight to say, like, whoa, what's going on?
Well,
does it remind you of that Boston movie with I'm fucking this up and making it 20 years longer. But so it's not Gone Girl, but it's like this terrible movie about a kid who is just left on its own and she finally gets adopted. And
Home Alone?
She has to. Yes. No. Just cut this off.
Mystic River?
Yes. Did it remind you of Mystic River?
I've actually never seen Mystic River, but sure.
The fact that you fucking pulled that out, impress it.
I was just trying Mystic River.
Boston?
Yeah.
Boston?
No,
Well, to underscore Luke's point, I read that Charles Schulz said, you'll notice in my stories, every relationship is unrequited love. And he's right. Nobody likes anybody back. And I'm like, I thought at first, oh, that's really cool. And then I thought, no, God, like, why did you base your entire universe where nobody is happy?
Oh, my God. I mean, the first joke, well, not the first joke, but one of the first jokes is like Charlie Brown gets invited to this party and Lucy's just like, you got invited?
Yeah.
There's no way it was you. There's two lists of people that can go to the party and people that can't go to the party. And you were on the can't go list. I was like, Jesus Christ.
That was the first 8 seconds of
Lucy's just such a little bitch.
She really is.
She loves her brother. So.
Well, and that's what's weird about the fact that this was ever popular in the first place, because the strips are like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people are really mean to each other and like nothing ever works out. And it's just like, and then like Snoopy is like the mascot for the Apollo 11 landing. Like, why? Yeah. Why was this so popular? I don't understand.
Today, I think it is today. I literally read the first Peanut strip ever written this morning, completely coincidentally.
Yes. Yeah.
It's four squares. It's two kids we don't know sitting on a stoop. I say we don't know as in it's not returning popular kids. It's not his characters.
Yeah.
First kid says, here comes good old Charlie Brown, as Charlie Brown's walking up, and then he's passing. Good old Charlie Brown, third square. He's pretty much almost out of the frame. Yep, there goes good old Charlie Brown, fourth frame. How I hate him. That is the payoff. That's the punchline. Yeah. A little child saying he hates another little child.
So, I mean, in my life, I've quoted the, oh, I got a rock, because I think I used to think that was hilarious. You know, like, so, I mean, I don't know who has not seen the show, but this thing, but
what is wrong with you?
Yeah, all these kids get candy and he gets a rock. He keeps getting rocks.
Yeah.
Who's passing out rocks?
Well, to go back to, I made the Home Alone joke on The Office. I think it's a cut scene. Pam says that Michael thinks Home Alone is a really sad movie because they leave the kid alone at home. They go away without him. It's one of those things where if you actually take a second to think about Charlie Brown, everybody should be in therapy or taken away from their families. Like, nothing is good.
The closest they have to therapy is paying the meanest girl in school a nickel to be analyzed.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
This
well, and just and that's one thing at watching it as an adult and as a parent, the complete lack of parents in this universe is like one of the first things that makes it so weird. Yeah. Like you said, like there's no there these kids are on their own completely. Linus sleeps an entire night in a pumpkin patch. Nobody's looking for
him. Not at all.
No one is worried about where he might
be. Dead.
Mystic River.
He should be dead.
Our son Atticus watched it with us, and I think he asked where the parents were, didn't he?
Yeah. We talked about it, so I have a feeling, yeah.
Because it's like there have been shows like Rugrats and other things where like there's situations where the kids are left to their own devices. And right. and you know, and there are situations where kids can go play and be by themselves and blah blah blah. This like the fact that Linus is left out at 4 a.m. And that Lucy sets the alarm, meaning she knows her parents don't give a fuck about her kids. And the only person who's gonna take care of this kid is her. Like, what kind of an abusive? Like, it felt like.
Of course, you know, she's mean to everybody.
Yes. I mean, her parents must be like alcoholics who passed out at their own Halloween party. And she
she's got to take care of it. Yeah.
Oh my God, what if Mystic River is just peanuts without the humor?
Well, he also, like, Tim, I can't get over the intent. Because, so obviously there are scenes where you're forced to have an adult talking, like the teacher in the classroom. And when he does that, he actively makes it so the communication can't exist. Like, the kids can't understand the teacher because it's all wah, 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 wah.
Yes.
It's like he chose to make a separation like that. It's crazy.
See, that part I kind of get in a way because it's like, okay, adults don't understand children, right? And children don't understand adults. So literally there's a miscommunication between the two and you don't get it. And we're in this children's world. Mm-hmm. In this situation, the parents do not even get, like the parents don't care where the kid is.
Right.
They don't even, it's not even a miscommunication. It is a complete lack of parenting entirely, borderline on abuse, where they've let this child. And, you know, it reminded me of like, those movies with alcoholic parents where the kid, one kid has to protect the other kid from the alcoholic parent, like make them eggs and grow up faster to protect the child. Like just watching it, just knowing the world we live in now, I was like, this makes me very sad. Also, who told Linus about the Great Pumpkin? Because it seems to be he had like there's nothing of it in pop culture. There's nothing of it. You know, like someone must have told him this thing, and also that it has to be a sincere pumpkin patch. Like he did something wrong, which is why
the pumpkin's not coming for.
Right, he still feels unworthy. He feels unworthy when he doesn't get the and because doesn't he end the doesn't the end with him reaffirming his belief again? Like, oh, I'll wait till next year.
Yeah, and he says I was probably in the wrong pumpkin patch because it wasn't sincere enough, or I didn't believe strong enough, so it's my fault. I was like. Oh my God!
Okay, well, and this is the worst show ever.
And again, it's incredible how this has endured for so long. Because I think anything else, either the Great Pumpkin would show up, or at least there would be like a hint that something happened. Nothing happened.
Nothing.
He is completely wrong.
Yeah.
He is totally delusional. There is no Great Pumpkin. There's no hint of it. And then
he blames himself.
Right. And then he's like, and then he still believes.
Make of this.
And we watch this every year.
Make of what you will of this, but when I was a kid, the Peanut specials were one of the touchstones that my father and I would always watch together.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Same here.
No, it didn't.
I mean, like, I don't think. I think it also. I don't know. I mean, it's years it's like 40, 50 years of that. No one. It was just a given that that was, you know, the behavior and ha ha ha. And also, you know, it came out at a time when people didn't talk about mental health and depression and things.
I've seen Mad Men.
Yeah. So, you know, oh, God. I just.
Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Let's end it here because I can't even.
But I mean. I think it's great. I mean, and the other specials, the main ones that they show are also great, but they're just, you know, again, watching it through adult eyes, like these are so bizarre. Why did we love these so much? They're so weird. And then the Halloween, I mean, the Thanksgiving one which I don't want to, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point, but like, that one is so weird. That's another one where it's like Charlie Brown has to make Thanksgiving dinner for his friends. Where are the parents? Like, yeah, why is someone doing this?
If I remember right, Peppermint Patty asks, can she not go to Thanksgiving dinner? And her parents are like, yeah, that's fine. You can go to Charlie Brown's house. It's like,
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't even. Yeah. And there's no, well, whatever. And then, of course, there's the Peppermint Patty complaining about there's no turkey.
Yeah.
And every year I'd be like, they are children. Like, what did you expect was going to happen? Of course they're going to serve you popcorn and toast. But anyway.
Well, as I was watching it and I was getting more and more sad, I was thinking about, like, well, maybe is the Christmas special just as sad?
Yes.
And I realized, well, yes. But also, there is redemption in the Christmas episode that it's not in the Halloween episode. So Charlie Brown is sad in the Christmas episode that Christmas, which is supposed to be a time of year of joy and of peace and goodwill towards
Christmas
men.
Christmas time is here.
It is, but it's become too commercial and it's affecting everything, including his dog. But then at the end, his friends are really his friends and they decorate his sad little tree after mocking him and understand, you know, like he tried his hardest and blah, blah, blah. And they come and help him. So his view of the world is corrected, you know, in a way, like his sadness towards the world is corrected in a way where, you know, he's like, I thought Christmas was about goodwill towards men. Yes, it is. Here it is. Here's the proof. The Halloween one is this kid who has made up his own holiday. Justifies sitting
adjacent
alone.
To Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween adjacent. And then at the end realizes he's done something wrong and it's all his fault and that's why he isn't redeemed.
If he could have just concentrated on the sugar and candy he'd gotten, he would have been so much more happier.
Well, he also turns he turns them away. They come to take him to go trick-or-treating. He says no. Sally, who is always in love with him, is like, you're an idiot, and leaves him. Like, it's brutal.
Yeah. There's also a, you know, it hits a little different, as the kids say, about someone who, when now in the year 2021, when someone is given proof of something and then will then twist it to make it fit their preconceived notions.
Yeah.
It's weird.
You know what? That might have been, honestly, that might have been something that was driving me crazy a little bit too, where it's just this stark belief in this thing despite evidence to the contrary. He was just like, I'm gonna take ivermectin and sit in this pumpkin patch.
Yeah.
It's totally gonna
it's
work.
Gonna work.
I'm gonna see the great pumpkin is gonna own the lips. Okay. So
well that's
all right. Happy Halloween,
yay,
everybody.
Oh man.
But those other three episodes. It was good. It's Halloween is good.
No, I mean, again, I think the Peanuts specials, all of them are great.
Yeah.
They are just so bizarre. Weird.
This
that
one made me sad and made me want to hold Charles Schulz up and just pat him on the head. You'll be okay.
A lot of people don't know this, but the song How Bizarre is because of Peanuts.
I heard that. Yeah, it's by it's OMG, weird. Which stands for, oh my goodness, Charlie Brown is so sad.
Anyway,
they dropped that last one. All right,
we're gonna go back to what we were doing before. Are we voting on these? Because I have feelings. If we want to, I can.
I mean,
vote.
It's a little. Okay.
It's a ridiculous thing to do.
They're pretty different.
Yeah,
pretty different.
They all had such great. I really enjoyed watching almost all of them.
Yeah,
there really wasn't a dud. Yeah. I mean, they were good in it for different reasons. But yeah, they were great.
Okay, then we're not. But if we were happy endings, that's one I would have voted
endings.
For.
Okay.
Yeah, same. Well, but Cheers had such a sweetness to it that I really enjoyed. But yeah, Happy Endings was. I want to go back and watch the whole series again.
Me too.
I would go Happy Endings mainly because that's what a Halloween night feels like to me. Like all those things happening. Mm. Cheers was a better story maybe, but I think Happy Endings is a better Halloween show episode rather.
Yeah.
But Superstore is still good too.
Yeah, of course. Superstore's great.
Superstore Sandy.
Sorry, Charlie Brown. You got kicked in the head again.
Oh my God. I'm giving you a lot of rocks. Oh,
and he didn't.
No, Luke, we are done. We're done. Dan,
guys,
which
we
one
talked
would
about this for 2 hours before we started the podcast. We thought Luke was done.
I need to call my therapist. I need to go have
Is it Lucy?
Don't call Lucy.
Yeah. We hear our jar of nickels in the background.
Oh, what a great sound. I love that sound.
I would say, gun to my head. I mean, I definitely laughed the most. I laughed the most during Happy Endings, but I think Cheers was the better episode.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
Yep.
No
question about that. Okay, well, thank you so much. We're going back to our AV club, and I believe the episode is something that Dan would tell you if he were here.
Sorry, if I had it.
Oh, shit.
It's fine. Who knows what? Okay. It's good. It's something good, though. I know it's going to be something good.
Yeah, we're getting into the top.
It's not Better Off Ted.
I believe it's the 30 Rock.
Oh, so good.
Is a good one.
Anyway, we love you so much. You are the wind beneath our wings. So come back next week. Subscribe. Talk to your friends. Talk to your therapist. And happy Halloween, you
happy
guys.
Halloween.
This is Michelle Lykowski.
I'm
Michelle Lykowski.
I'm Stab Lykowski.
I'm nice. Luke Ward behind you.
Oh!
I'm Dan the Rooster.
Yay.
The rooster.
The rooster.
Dan the rooster.
And this was another FN podcast about sitcoms. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, y'all.
Bye.
This has been another effing podcast about sitcoms. The music for our theme song is by Ryan Satoy, and the lyrics and vocals are by our own Michelle Lykowski. Our logo was created by Luke Ward. Follow us on Instagram, and if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, well, we'd certainly appreciate it. Another effing podcast about sitcoms will return in this time slot next week.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.